what you want. We've got a mind that's hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games, and you know we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too, and you rant about this podcast too, just a sight where Jeremy analyzes some matches, and kiss me in the bridges, we do some good interviews. And you know from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too? You love this podcast too.
Welcome into the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. Jeremy Moss here. As always, you can check us out at mwcconnection.com. Give us 5 stars. Give us a review. We'd love it. iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, of course, where we're at as well. We're now starting something during the offseason here. Hopefully, it's consistent with as many teams as possible. And my first guest here we had on, we talked quite a bit for a while, longer than expected, but we're attempting to preview every non-conference opponent as many as possible within the Mountain West schedule. So I did this one a couple weeks ago about Wisconsin with Jake Kokorowski from BuckiesFifthQuarter.com here on SB Nation. They play Utah State, so we're going to discuss, I think, in 15 minutes or so. But Jake knows his stuff. He goes on and talks for, well, not that he just talks, but he just gives great information. Ended up being about a 45-minute conversation talking about Wisconsin, what to expect. We reminisce about that 2012 game where had Utah State had a few extra yards, made a field goal, could have gone to the Orange Bowl because that was the year Northern Illinois had one loss and went to the Orange Bowl versus Florida State. So we kind of reminisce about that. We learn all about the quarterback situation. Now they have Alex Thornybrook as the guy. We talk about a Hawaii transfer who could be starting for the Warriors or starting for the Buckeyes and the or Badgers. Not what am I doing? Buckeyes. No, Buckeyes with quarter Wisconsin Badgers. Yeah, close enough. You can see how that mix-up could come about. So we discuss what they have coming back, and we're gonna attempt to do all these off-season podcasts. Like I said, hopefully with a daily hike, news and notes, possibly about every morning, maybe 3 times a week. Because we'll have our football show as well with Matt Kennelly. We're going to start our previews pretty soon on the Mountain West. I'll have a couple more basketball podcasts as well with Eli Boettger, who's been crushing it on the transfer news this offseason. And we'll just kind of get to all that sort of fun stuff and maybe have some fun, of course, because we do have nonsense. But our first interview again tonight, it's all one team, Wisconsin, Jake Kokorowski from BuckiesFifthQuarter.com. Check him out and enjoy the interview, folks. Now. All right, and now as we this is the first one. We'll start with that. This is a bold goal we're trying to do. We're going to try to talk to somebody who just covers every non-conference team from the Mountain West. We're starting with Utah State on this particular road. Whenever you're listening to this, maybe it's July, who knows, but it's mid-April. Tax day, I guess, so whatever, tax day, that's whatever. I don't know why I'm talking about taxes, but today's tax day. We're talking – I'm just rambling for some reason. It came to my mind, oh, tax day. But no, we're talking Wisconsin – they do play BYU, but Utah State. That's my other job. I got to know about you guys, too, for that as well, down the road. But we got Jake Kokorowski from Buckeyes Fifth Quarter to talk. A quick, what are we going to call this? A spring update, I guess?
I like that. Yeah, no, we appreciate you jumping on board Buckeyes Fifth Quarter and giving us a Q&A, too, because, you know, people are excited. I mean, you know, let's face it, besides spring football and there's pro day, football's it's 24/7, 365. There's something going on either college or pro. And we really appreciate you jumping on board and doing the Q&A with us last month, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, hopefully people learned a bit about Utah State when I blindly threw some nuts at a few things and got some stuff right, but we covered the whole thing, so we got the basics down. So people,
hopefully they got a little bit about who the Aggies are because they struggled last year. But what when you think Utah State, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I mean, you think about Gary Anderson, obviously from Wisconsin perspective, because he, you know, you and I talked about it right before we recorded the show about 2012 and the third game of the year. Wisconsin was 1-1 after that terrible loss to Oregon State. Jared Aberderis was injured, and Gary Anderson and then defensive coordinator Dave Aranda had a great scheme to stymie Wisconsin. Danny O'Brien was replaced at halftime at quarterback by one Joel Stavi, who could be honestly the most polarizing figure in modern Wisconsin football history, being a walk-on, and then just the back and forth, and then Wisconsin eking out the win there. So yeah, I think that's the first thing I think of with Utah State is Gary Anderson and Dave Aranda, those two. And if it's one thing that Wisconsin fans, I think really, one good thing about the Gary Anderson era, besides the winning ways, they had 19 wins in his 2 years there at Wisconsin, was the fact they brought Dave Aranda on board and transformed a 4-3 defense into an attacking 3-4 scheme that is still being implemented, and now it's in its third implementation by Jimmy Leonard, who's the new defensive coordinator.
Yeah, what I remember about that game, because it was Utah State was a really good team, and I remember too, like, at some points, we're not going to dive deep into a game 5 years ago, but what I do remember watching that game, like, Wisconsin, we'll get to this later, but Wisconsin's offensive line just 350 minimum, seems like, those guys, and Utah State was doing a good job. Their defense has always been great, except with Anderson there, pushing back against Monte Ball and any running game they had. But what made me so mad in that game, Utah State was in striking distance. They're getting close. They get a stupid 15-yard penalty. They try a long pass for some reason instead of trying to maybe center the field to get a good field goal. End up being a 37-yarder, which for college kickers, that's questionable in any weather, indoor, outdoor. He missed it. I'm like, you could have had like almost a chip shot to get the win. And what I tell people all the time when we chatted about this game, because that was your Northern Illinois went to the Orange Bowl versus Florida State.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they had the first time ever a one-loss team got to the BCS for the
Group of five?
Current group of five. And not that Utah State would have beat Florida State, but had they won against Wisconsin, they could have had – it could have changed a lot of things. Gary Anderson still could have left to Wisconsin – just because you go to the BCS game, you get a pickup anyways. But I just remember that game. It was a 2-point loss. Defense did pretty well against that Wisconsin line. But then that last drive, Chucky Keaton, the fame to Chucky Keaton, like, oh, come on. So that's kind of remember about that game. Had they beaten Wisconsin? Orange Bowl for the Aggies, but.
No, it's, you know, and that was also with that offensive line. Wisconsin had let Mike Marcus and that offensive line coach go. It was a different type. You know, Paul Crist, who's now the head coach, left from being an offensive coordinator at UW to Pitt. And he took Joe Rudolph with him, and the Wisconsin type of offense, a pro style look that Crist employs, and in came Brett Bielema, replaced with someone that everyone thought, oh, this guy has tons of experience, and Marcus, and he was Ole Miss's old line coach. Yeah, I think he had coached Michael Orr, and so like everyone's like, oh yeah, this is going to be great, and it really you let your offensive line coach go in 2 weeks into the season isn't a good sign. And so they were used to a guy like Bob Bostad, who actually went to Pitt with Chris, then left Pitt like within a matter of a couple months to go take over a job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as their offensive line coach. And that line it got better underneath Bart Miller. That offensive line was in shambles in terms of just trying to find its identity at post-Crist. I mean, they got it together, obviously, by the end of the year. You saw what they did against Nebraska with Matt Canada and whatnot as its offensive coordinator. But, yeah, it's crazy, man. It's crazy, like, 5 years later where both programs have gone.
Exactly. Utah State's sort of – they're not the 120 out of 120 they were for as an independent leaving the Big West, but they're – they're much better, at least a respectable team at the moment. But let's get to current day football. Nobody wants to get half decade old game. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we could go into, but let's start big picture really quick. So what's the main focus? Because their spring is about to wrap up this week, at the end of it, last third week of April. What's kind of the big overview of what Wisconsin wanted to work on this spring?
Yeah, I mean, and this is with, a lot of people with cover Wisconsin know about, you know, Paul Chryst uses this time, and a lot of coaches do too, but Chryst especially, just, this isn't a time for position battles necessarily. This is a time for learning where these teams, these players, there's a lot of, you'll see some position shifts, most notably like at free safety right now, where a nickel cornerback in Natrell Jamerson, who was the starting nickel back, their third cornerback before he was injured last year, moves up in, you know, as a safety. He'll be the free safety patrolling the back, the third level of the defense, alongside Dakota Dixon, who's the strong safety. So, I mean, they'll have those position switches. They had some, that was one of the bigger ones and whatnot. So, but it's also a time for like quarterbacks. You know, they named Alex Hornibrook the starter. There wasn't really a doubt in my mind on that heading into it. The fact that his backups are a redshirt freshman and a true freshman who enrolled early in Kari Lyles and Jack Cohen. So this is a time for like the quarterbacks to test their limits. And he said it even last year when there was a competition between Hornibrook and now Bart Houston, who's looking to try to get into the NFL. He, where, look, test your limits. See what you can't do right now. You know, fall camp's a time where that momentum will grow, and they have to start making those plays. This is the time where they can see what they can work on their timing. They can work on just whatever areas of improvement, of growth that they can make, they need to work on. And in Wisconsin, really, it's you're losing some key players that are going to be drafted. You know, you could have two first round draft picks this year with Ryan Ramczyk, the left tackle. It's been, talking about SB Nation, Dan Kadar from Mocking the Draft said, in this one, I think this morning, said that he predicts him to go to the Broncos at number 20. J.J. Watt's brother, TJ, is an outside linebacker. Both were All-American. He got nods, consensus, first team All-Big Ten selections. And TJ, led the team in sacks and tackles for loss. And, they have to hit both those guys at the reports, replace 1,800 yards and 20-some-odd rushing touchdowns from last year in Corey Clement and Dare Ogunbowale, the latter, one of my favorite stories because he's a former walk-on, and I wrote a book about the Wisconsin's walk-on tradition, so I got to know him really well. Vince Beagle, outside linebacker. Sojourn Shelton started a school record 51 games out of 54 in his career. And so, you have these key pieces that they're going to replace, including Houston, who came on as quarterback. Started the year, fell off, really a roller coaster, then started getting more reps towards the second half of the year and really performed well and ended his career as a winner. And so you have these pieces that are kind of oh man, they lost these guys. But this team's coming back with a lot of starters. Some of them were injured this, spring, didn't take a lot of reps, but they bring back a lot of talent. They bring back the ability, the offensive line that's been really kind of was broken down in 2015. Last year saw good signs, but still needed to progress. And this year, it should really be intriguing to see where they grow, having four of the five offensive linemen returning that were starters, even a fifth one in Micah Kapoy that's kind of a jack-of-all-trades with the guard side that could play both left and right guard. And you also have, outside linebacker, I think, is a big one where even though they're trying to test limits, you've seen guys like Garrett Dooley, who stepped up big last year as the Vince Beagle and TJ Watt spelling them both at the boundary and the field side, the outside linebacker, from what it looked like. But also trying to find a starter opposite him, whether it's a redshirt sophomore like Zach Bond, a guy like Andrew Van Ginkle, who's a JUCO transfer out of Iowa Western Community College, who played at South Dakota his freshman year and it was first team all conference for South Dakota, and then decided to try to make his way and try to find a Division I A offer, an FBS offer. So, and they're also looking at even Leon Jacobs, who's been kind of a jack of all trades of starting off at outside linebacker his freshman year, moving inside linebacker, starting a game there, getting injured, lost on the depth chart, goes to play fullback last year. Only injuries come back. He jumps back to inside linebacker, and now it's a circle of life of football. He's back at outside linebacker. So, there are certain areas where, trying to replace Ramczyk at left tackle, replacing Watt and Beagle and all that production outside linebacker is probably the biggest question they have when it comes to that. And then, trying to, with the secondary, replacing Sojourn Shelton and Leo Musso, who contributed 9 interceptions altogether. But honestly, the secondary, I think they'll rebuild. It's an intriguing, like, this team, despite the losses that they have, and there could be a handful of draft picks for this year for Wisconsin Badgers that we'll see next week. But honestly, I think this team's going to reload, but it's not really a rebuilding year.
That's what it seems like. You've answered probably questions 4, 5, and 6 here, but
oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. that's great stuff. I do that too sometimes when I'm chatting on our show. I'm like, I'll just spend however many minutes going on. But let's we'll kind of break down what you mentioned a little bit. Like, let's go back to quarterback. Last year they played two guys, Hornibrook and the other guy. I forget his name. I should have looked it up. But
Bart Houston.
What quarter? Yeah, that's right. That's right. I remember watching. He played pretty well in that Cotton Bowl, 11-12 versus Western Michigan, I believe. But so how does it make? It's a big deal when you have continuity, because you said there's no position battles in spring, really. You're kind of, it's more teaching, you're getting learned to the position, then they'll sort all that stuff out, watching the film again, they're going through fall camp. So how big of a deal does it make it for Wisconsin offense that you have not only, I believe, 3 of your top 4 receivers back, and you have the one guy at quarterback? Because I watched a little bit of Wisconsin last year, not that they yanked back and forth, but when you're splitting time, it does make a, it's not always the best situation to go from quarterback to quarterback. So how is it for this team? You got just the one guy, knowing it's him no matter what.
You know, a couple of years back they had Joel Stave. He was named starter as well. And despite they had Houston on board, but Houston was, you know, with Houston, you feel bad for him. This is a kid that was highly touted out of De La Salle High School in California and really highly touted. Had surgery his first year. He was recruited by Crist. You know, and Crist, if Crist is there all 4 years, you know, let's say he leaves – you know, Pitt after 1 year after Bielema bolts for Fayetteville. Who knows what you could say about Houston, what he's going to, you know, what he does in his career underneath the tutelage of Crist for 3-some-odd seasons. But he gets lost under Gary Anderson, and Gary tried to run. He tried to change Wisconsin's offense to be more of a spread look and have a mobile quarterback. That didn't necessarily fit Bart's MO. He actually became a rugby punter, but rugby style punter for one year for in 2014. But so back to Stave, I mean, you know, he was named the starter right off the bat for the 2015 season in the spring. This year, 2 years later, you know, Hornibrook, just the guys behind him, the platoon worked for most of the season. You know, I mean, for the Badgers, you'd think it wouldn't, but Paul Crist is the quarterback whisperer when it comes to that, where he's able to get the most out of his quarterbacks, and he's got a great quality control assistant underneath the name of John Budmeyer, a former quarterback himself in the late 2000s, early 2010s, who had his career was cut short due to injury, but it was in Crist's offense. But, you know, Hornibrook, I think it's only going to help him. He knows he's a starter. It's a confidence builder. He's been working with George Whitfield Jr., the quarterback guru himself that was working within Johnny Manziel, Jameis Winston,
everybody.
Andrew Luck, on that note. So, like, he, you know, Hornibrook knows. I mean, and one of the biggest drawbacks with Hornibrook was the fact that he could not, his passes compared to Houston. Houston's got an NFL arm. I think he'll find somewhere in a camp, at least mini camps. Who knows, maybe up in Canada. But, you know, he's got the NFL caliber arm. It's a pro arm. It just took a while, and having three quarterbacks or three offenses, and, you know, systems in 4 or 5 years is a lot for him, for a quarterback to undertake. But he, you know, Hornibrook, you know, his arm strength wasn't necessarily there. It kind of seems like that lofted a bit. You've seen that change now, where, you know, the first day of spring practice, I'm out there and another media guy nudges me and he goes, "Hey, what do you think about Alex's arm? Like, you think Hornibrook's arm is looking, you know, solid?" And I said, "You know, let me take a couple more throws." And you're watching it, and there's a little bit more zip on it. There's a little more strength on it. And so, you know, it's not, you know, it's part of its footwork. You know, I had to ask Alex about it too. I'm like, you talk about arm strength. Like, where does it come from? Is it the base? Is it, you know, obviously improving your arm strength and, you know, whatever you have to do for lifting or calisthenics with the arm, but, you know, just footwork and pocket presence too. And he said, yeah, you know, it's, you know, trying to get a better base and whatnot. I mean, it was really a great answer. There's, you know, there's obviously a science to it, and he's been working on it. And so this year, I think Alex really, you know, it's one of those things from 2009 to 2010, Scott Tolzien, who is a backup for the Indianapolis Colts for Andrew Luck, he basically, you know, 2009 was named the starter, had a great year. Wasn't great with the interceptions, but in 2010, he completed, if I'm not mistaken, like over 70% of his passes, had cut down his interception ratio drastically, his interceptions drastically, was named the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award winner, and now he's found a home in the NFL. I think Hornibrook, and he's only a redshirt sophomore, I think he could take that next step where he cuts down turnovers. He's going to have that ability. He's more confident. This could be a huge year for him. And like I said, he's still got two more years after 2017. And he could make his name, and as a just one of the better quarterbacks in Wisconsin history. This is, he was a late signee, too. He enrolled early in 2015, and there's another highly touted quarterback in the class by the name of Austin Kafensis. He was recruited underneath Gary Anderson, but you could see from the first day of spring when you see in those quarterbacks throwing that Alex had the better shot underneath Chris, and just with the style of quarterback. And honestly, it's you're seeing this come through, to fruition now. And gosh, man, like I'm high on Hornibrook in terms of that. When it comes to that, I think he's got a real shot to be something special for Wisconsin and lead this team heading into next year.
So let me ask you this. Like, with the running game, like you said, they have to replace a Corey Clement, but I've seen places, you and others, say, oh, they should be fine with all the returning linemen back. Does he need to have that downfield throwing despite having that much? Because there's so much talent around him. What is that, seven offensive starters back from last year approximately with the linemen, receivers, and he's half a starter, I guess, for Alex there. Does he need that downfield threat? Because not like Wisconsin typically, maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong, it's obviously running the ball quite a bit. There's not a ton of 25-plus, 30-plus yard passes, not even 20-yard down the field. They need him to do that, really?
I think so. You saw it last year. That's how he got playing time, is that Bart had the cannon of an arm, but Alex has this his ability, and you've seen it throughout spring practice too, where he can put perfect touch and like the placement on the ball and on his passes and throwing deep, accurate passes to that third level of the defense. He's made those throws, and it's been continuing to see it. You saw it a little bit last year, not too much, where, like, for instance, in the Iowa game, Quintez Cephas, who's a true freshman, who should be the number, the starting wide receiver complementing Jazz Peavy, he made a 57-yard catch, and it was perfectly thrown that you could get underneath, Cephas caught it, running underneath it, and then almost scored off of it. And so... he's known for that, and with this offense, and it's still the offensive line, like they with Ramczyk, they have David Edwards out there now at left tackle, and it should be interesting to see, obviously, with a southpaw as Hornibrook is, he's not a right-handed quarterback, he's left-handed, and so it's not as the right tackle is more of the blind side, but you're also with that the running game still churning, and Ramczyk was a great run blocker, so despite having to, the running game being the staple, it's still progressing. And even Paul Chris said today during his Monday press conference that they're getting better where they want to be. They're doing everything the right, in terms of the weight room and preparing in the film room at practice. He's on all three levels there. They're doing everything they can. They still have work to do. So the passing game still needs to be on point. And they don't just have Jazz Peavy, who led the receivers in receptions, and also but led the team in receiving yards. You also have a guy like Troy Fumagalli down the seam, who's a tight end, and he had a great season last year where he started off hot against LSU, 7 receptions, 100 yards, but then also capped off his year with a huge game against Western Michigan in that Cotton Bowl you mentioned earlier, where he, I forgot how many passes he caught, but he caught a touchdown at the end of the game that essentially sealed the win early in the fourth quarter, but led the team in receptions. This guy's, again, another former walk-on that's really showing up huge, and this is a kid that I think will be all-conference this year, and he could it's another line of great tight ends underneath Paul Chris' offense, like you've seen with Lance Kendricks, Owen Daniels, Garrett Graham, among others, Travis Beckham, who, granted, he didn't make it that well in the NFL, but these guys, this guy could, I think, not just in the red zone, but down the field catching, they're going to be able to exploit defenses with Peavy. They're going to be able to exploit the offenses with Troy Fumagalli. But even in the short-term game, in the passing game, Chris James, a Pitt transfer played for Crist back in 2014, and this guy has been called in media reports, and I've seen him live for most of the practices. People have called him electric, has run with a sense of brutality, is what someone else coined it. And then also, I mean, I call him a game changer, where out of the backfield, people call him a third down back. I think he could be an every down back, possibly. But when you get out of the backfield, if it's on a wheel route, don't even bother trying to catch him. The guy is fast, and there are some weapons here. I mean, this is the team could be solid, and this passing game, they'll need it. They absolutely will need it to open up the defense a little bit, because you can't have nine guys in the box and expect to expect to have success all the time. They need to keep defenses honest, and I think Hornibrook will this year.
Excellent. Let's kind of go to a quick defense side really quick. There's one player who's kind of familiar to us. He was at Hawaii. I remember he transferred. You have Nick Nelson, the DB there. Yep. And he replaced a guy who had, I think, 50 starts? How is he looking? Because his 2 years at Hawaii, he was one of their better defenders during the very, very dark years of Norm Chow as the head coach.
Yeah, Nick Nelson, and just hearing from some people, I mean, they're high on him. It's one of those things where last year, obviously, he had a sit because of the transfer rules. Like Chris James, who I think would have played last year for Wisconsin because of his speed on the offensive side of the ball. But Nelson has the ability, good cover corner. I haven't seen too many mistakes on his end, And obviously, you'll have some passes caught on you here and there. But really, this, from what I've seen in the spring, he's been really solid. I think the coaching staff's really high on him, Instantly, an article on UWBadgers.com said he's the expected starter. That's even with a guy like Lubrin Figaro, who had to jump in, and he's played safety and cornerback in his career, and he, played a lot of games because a lot of college teams go to that spread look or an 11 personnel or, just a spread look where you need five defensive backs, and I thought Figaro might get a better look, but Nelson is really a special talent, I think, and it's going to be interesting to see what he does in that backfield. And then, he's replacing Soldier Shelton, who is now, was one of the smaller defensive backs, but at 5'9 and about a buck, he's about a buck 80 right now. I talked to him a few weeks ago for Bucky's fifth quarter, but he's it's a big step for him to try to really step up in Shelton's shadow. But honestly, talking to Shelton, he thinks this defensive backfield is going to take a step forward this year. And that's underneath the tutelage of Jim Leonard, who's now the defensive coordinator after 1 year of being a college coach. But if people don't know Jim Leonard's backstory, he's a former walk-on at Wisconsin, became a three-time All-American, then moved on, went undrafted, then had a 10-year NFL career, was the strong safety, was basically the quarterback of Rex Ryan's defenses for the Ravens in 2008 and the Jets from 2010 to, I think, to 2012. And then, basically any type of Rex Ryan, Mike Pettine defense, he led, and he was highly sought after for that. And, Jimmy has that ability to, last year, taking over the secondary, they had, if I'm not mistaken, 16 of the team's 21 interceptions. And there's a confidence, there's a swagger to these kids now that, you didn't necessarily see underneath previous defensive backs coaches. And that's nothing against, recent defensive backs coaches, but Jimmy's, is teaching him that experience that he has in the NFL, and now he's going to take it here at Wisconsin to be the defensive coordinator. This secondary was flying high last year, and with hearing from Sojourn Shelton, saying that, he thinks the secondary is going to take off, and he said that even on social media, and Nelson's going to be a big part of that, and I think we'll see what comes of it, but I don't think they're going to drop off a bit.
All right, let's do a couple more things here really quick. I was reading something about a month or so ago. You got all the off-season content or nonsense you want to see that goes out there. You probably read this, the insider piece by Casey Joyner a while back, about a month ago. He says Wisconsin is a sleeper to be in the playoff. How is a team that went to the Cotton Bowl winning double-digit victories last year, a sleeper for the playoff? And they were in the Big Ten title game last year. You would think, I get there's four teams, but really a sleeper? Come on.
I think it's the schedule. I mean, you take a look at their schedule, it's not what it was last year. People were saying if they're 7-6, they, you know, fans would be happy. They're like, oh, you got, you know, look on paper, LSU, oh, they're what, number 5 or number 6 or number 7 in the nation, depending on which poll you looked at. You had Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, all, you know, it was a murderer's row those first few, you know, few weeks with Michigan State, Michigan on the road, then a bye week, then Ohio State going to Iowa, then Nebraska. First five were just terrible. And then they had to go to Northwestern, which has been just an abyss of losing. Like, it's just a black hole of charisma and whatever you want to call it. And just Northwestern's been terrible to play at for Wisconsin in recent history. And they exercised those demons. And then they had to go to, you know, playing against, you know, long story short, they overachieved last year compared to what fans' expectations were, even though you could see the signs of this team being solid in spring and in fall camp. And this year, I mean, you look at their non-conference, I mean, they have Utah State, they have Florida Atlantic, which should be interesting with Lane Kiffin there. BYU, I think, will be obviously be a challenge going out in, you know, to Provo, Utah, and having an away game there. I mean, their hardest, I think maybe, you know, I feel like they have to win out to really be considered right now, obviously this is on paper, right?
Of course.
But you know, Nebraska is underneath. Yeah. They have Bob Diaco as defensive coordinator now in the 3-4. So that's interesting to see. And that's one thing in Nebraska. They have the, you know, their, what do they call them, the black shirts, and the defense hasn't been that great. And you can see that in the 2012 Big Ten Championship game, but that's a different story underneath Bo Pelini. But when they hung 70 up on him. But this is a, you know, I think that's going to be a tough game. You're looking at, this year I somehow feel like Illinois is going to be a little pesky with Lovie Smith. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win, obviously, but I think Wisconsin will win. But, you know, I'm interested to see how Lovie Smith kind of turns around the Fighting Illini. But, you know, Iowa's always tough just because it's a rivalry game. But Michigan, I mean, the last two games of the year are really going to decide it, where, yeah, obviously Michigan's replacing how many starters that are now probably going to play in the NFL starting in 2017. So they have a lot to really try to make up for there. But Michigan's going to be a tough game. And then you have Minnesota with underneath P.J. Fleck. They're replacing their quarterback, their wide receiver. Drew Waller-Tarski was their entire passing game last year. But P.J. Fleck is a great motivator. You're already starting to see some things on the recruiting trail, even with Wisconsin target that loved the Wisconsin visit last week. Goes up to Minnesota, instantly commits. You're like, what? Where did that come from? So there's some things going on in Minnesota and even Nebraska, like I said, down the road with Nebraska. So I think that's why maybe the schedule is just not as tight. I mean, if they had the same schedule as last year and then they're like, oh, yeah, against these guys, then you're starting to say, okay, you know, if they can win, maybe they're not a sleeper anymore. But I just, you know, I think the schedule is kind of a thing there. But really, they have so much talent coming back, and I think they're hitting it right where I think Hornibrook's going to have a special year. I think this defense, even with, like, you know, Jack Citchie and Chris Orr, who are two inside linebackers that were injured last year, season-ending injuries, they're coming back with, you know, inside linebacker could be the most the deepest group that you'll see, you know, on this team. I think on all three levels, including special teams, I think their punting situation is not being taken care of, and their place kicker, Rafael Gaglianone, is now back and kicking field goals after being out for most of last year, too. This team has the ability to go far, and not just a Big Ten West championship.
Like, not the schedule, like, they miss Ohio State, they get Michigan at home, no Penn State. Like, to be honest, it's conceivable at BYU might be their toughest road game throughout the whole year. And they had one ish, the only, like, maybe the sleeper thing because of schedule, not, it's obviously a great schedule, Big Ten, but not overly tough because home games are favorable. You miss a couple of the big teams of the division. Their buys early. The only concern I really have is their buys in week 4. That's it. That's the only issue I'd have. They play their complete conference slate, starting with Northwestern, the rest of the way. That's the only downside I see to their schedule because you get Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota the last 3 weeks. But I don't know. I just thought sleeper's kind of an odd term after looking through who they have back, who they're playing. But they'll be in the mix for sure. So one last question. Since it's we're making a middle of April, like I said early on my rambling about tax day, what's your stupid prediction for this game right now when we still have like 4 months left?
I mean, I think, you know, I think Wisconsin will, I'm really high on, I mentioned Chris James and I mentioned another guy I didn't get a chance to mention, but he contributed last year, Bradrick Shaw. UWBadgers.com, there's an article there called them Thunder and Lightning. I think the running game is going to be phenomenal this year. When you add in like an edge type run like you have with the Jazz sweep with Jazz P, or they call it the Jazz sweep here. It's a jet sweep. It's a flanker sweep, fly sweep, and they run it really well with a guy with named Jazz Peavy. I think it'll be a tough game for Utah State. I'll probably say like a 42-10, 42-13 Badgers. I think
this,
you know, it's nothing against Utah State. I really feel this Wisconsin team, without injuries. Now here's the key thing with this too. Let me tell you about this, Jeremy. Where if Alex Hornibrook's injured, it's sort of like how Russell Wilson was with the Badgers in 2011. If he's injured by any stretch, that team in 2011 is not where it is. And I think with Hornibrook, and obviously I'm not trying to put him on the same pedestal as Russell Wilson. I'm just saying the people behind them, because Russell Wilson that year, John Budmeyer, who's now that quality control coach for offense, he was injured. So he's the only other guy with game experience. They would have had to go to a redshirt freshman that, you know, named Joel Brennan, that did not have any experience. And he transferred out of the program after 2012. So like, you know, if they don't have like I think Kari Lyles and Jack Cohn will develop into great quarterbacks for Wisconsin, and they'll compete maybe next year or the year down the line against Hornibrook. But you know, Hornibrook's the guy, and if your quarterback goes down, it's going to be it's worst case scenario. I mean, that offense that changes everything. So, I mean, I think they win 42-13. This team, you know, depending upon what happens going forward, this is a team that could maybe lose, you know, they could go, in my opinion, undefeated. But like I said, they have to go to BYU, they have to go to Nebraska, and they have to face, you know, Iowa, Michigan, and Minnesota to end out the year. It's probably three of their arguably hardest opponents outside of Nebraska. Even though Northwestern will be good, too. So, I mean, it's, you know, or decent in the Big Ten West. It's not Ohio State or Michigan State, or, you know, for that matter. Or Penn State, for that matter, too. But, you know, this team could be special, and I think they start out off on the right foot on a Friday night.
Yeah, I think, like, right now, if you look at some early stuff like the S&P, it's 22-point margin of victory. I'm like, that sounds conservative, I think, a little bit. Because Utah State, they do have a new OC in David Yost, who is at Missouri forever, and Oregon. It's a new offense. They do have some decent returning receivers. Like, they have a Is Rayshon Lewis Ray Lewis is a kid, is at Utah State, and he's done some pretty good things. They have one of the best names, Ron Quavion Tarver, at wide receiver. It's like the guys from the Key and Peele sketch for the North and South team. Like, really? That's the name you have? But that's the only way I could see them doing something decent, because they do have some pretty good receiver talent, and Kent Myers is a senior QB, but this isn't the defense of old with Gary Anderson there. Defense has just been a mess the past year or two, and so I don't think it's going to be close, but their only chance to score some points is if those receivers, they have enough of them where they could break something off, but that's about it. But my goal right now, at least for Utah State fans, if it's within three touchdowns, give yourself a pat in the back. Sorry, but it's true. Come on.
No, I mean, it's a tough environment. I mean, it's you know, Wisconsin can't run all that. There was a big stink, too, by the way, where you know, the Big Ten's doing some Friday night games.
Friday.
And it's a high. Usually, it's reserved for high school games. It's only one game. Wisconsin said they'd only do it, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had said like the first game of the year. They're not doing anything like that for the rest of the season, so it shouldn't be a big deal for like the WIAA here. But I mean, it caused a bit of a big stink, because obviously they have to move the games to Thursday night for the kids. It is, like, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Labor Day weekend then.
Yeah.
So it is they're going Friday night. It'll be on probably Big Ten Network, or maybe on ESPN. We'll have to take a look on that. But
or even Fox News is a place, right, this year?
Yeah, I have to look into that. I forgot where they're going to do that.
It's somewhere.
Yeah, but yeah,
you'll be able to find it.
Yeah, you'll definitely be able to find it. But this team is really just, you know, it could be, you know, start of a good year. But yeah, like, even that Friday night stuff is, you know, there was some debate about it. I know that, you know, anytime Big Ten can get more exposure, they're going to try for it. So
you're not going to pull a Northwestern and just say, we're not going to play?
Yeah, no, right. No, basically, I mean, yeah, Northwestern did it. Well, not just that. Here's the weird thing, too, is that, like, if they're going to make a rule like this, like, do it for everybody. But they had, like, if I'm not mistaken, like, Michigan State and Ohio State were just, nah, we're good.
Certain weekends or something, right? Wasn't, like, certain weekends or something they'd be okay to do? I believe that was the case.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
I don't see Michigan on this. I don't think they're on a Friday night schedule, though. I don't think they're doing anything.
Let's say this. Fox is paying you this much. ESPN this much. You can, my opinion, because for us, you're obviously Utah State, Boise State, Colorado State, even... I'm a University of Utah fan. They'll play Pac-12 games on Thursday nights. Like, if you're going to pay Jim Harbaugh $8 million a year, you can sacrifice one game on Friday. Not even sacrifice. You could have a game on Friday where, to be honest, more people may watch your Friday night game compared to 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. I think the trade-off is not a big deal for one game a year.
Yeah, I think if you do it early enough, especially for Wisconsin, like... It's tough. Like, I just don't know, like, on Friday nights, let's say, for recruits for those other schools that are doing the Friday night games, like, those are the same times you're trying to get your recruits to, you know, for official visits. And a Friday night lights game is always fun. Like, that's where Wisconsin last year, they had, again, Ohio State at night. They had Nebraska at night. Those were two of the big recruiting nights for those. You know, in Wisconsin spring game, though, it brings in a lot of the commits, and Wisconsin already has, if I'm not mistaken, like, eight verbal commitments right now. So they'll be at the spring game. It's not like Nebraska where they just had, like, you know, three or four guys commit on the spot, you know, and you have a sellout crowd. Wisconsin, if they get above 10,000 fans at the, you know, at the spring game on Friday night, they'll be happy. You know, I mean, that'll be happy. It's just not a big thing compared to the Ohio State, which quote unquote sold out, or Nebraska or other places where, and whatnot. So you know, having a Friday night game like this early on will help, probably because the WIA, if there's any in-state recruits that haven't committed, will be able to see it, and hopefully other programs will be able to see it too. Otherwise, I'm sure they'll try to go to, like, I know the other big game for that is Michigan later on that year, which is on a Saturday, and we'll see what time they'll announce that. So it's, you know, like I said, it'll be fun on a Friday night, but, you know, keeping it to one game a year I think is fair.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Just the special rules is kind of odd. So you've exceeded the time limit we planned on before. but it's great. You brought the – I got a question. I'll let you go because you're the expert. Because, honestly, looking around for research, I go to, like, Madison.com, like, oh, they've got videos. But, like, I'm at Bucky's fifth quarter. I'm like, you're practice pretty much every day. Your stuff, to me, seems much better, at least more thorough than what they're doing at the major newspaper in town. Unless I'm missing, is there – besides Madison.com, is there something else I'm missing besides your site?
No. And honestly, Madison.com, there's a great guy for the Wisconsin State Journal by the name of Jason Galloway, and he actually used to write for Bucky's Fifth Quarter, too, and that's how I met him. And he went to school in Alabama, I think he actually went to Alabama, if not mistaken. We gave him some crap in 2015 about it when they went to AT&T Stadium for the game. But it's Jason's a great guy, and he does some great stuff. I mean, he takes, like, some amazing stats during practice. Just, I mean, they don't always put it up on the paper, too, because it's spring practice. And like I mentioned, this isn't a fact that the – this is, you know, they're testing their limits. They are not trying to, you know, if you're completing 9 of – 20 passes, but you're also throwing passes that you probably shouldn't be, but you're testing it. But I mean, you know, you do take a look at, you know, he's detailed with that. Those guys are great. BadgerBlitz.com, BadgerNation.com, those guys. Wisconsin State Journal.
Quit naming other websites besides yours. Come on. I'm kidding.
I know. Maybe I'm a nice guy. I'm the guy that brings donuts to spring practice. I'm like, guys hungry? I brought donuts. And like one Friday night I did. And now they expect me to bring donuts every night. That's I'm the donut guy on the beat, man.
Yeah. No, I was just looking around for stuff. I'm like, okay, I don't want to spend watching videos. So I'm like, your site, great, good stuff there. I know there's others. I'm like, they look good. But I'm like, hey, let's zero into your stuff. But it's... Covered spring football, great. Sometimes it's tough. I do some covering for other stuff. I do, like, I cover BYU. I'm like, going to spring practice. I'm like, oh, we can watch 20 minutes. They're in Skelly, or they're doing just skeleton, or what's the word I'm looking for, shells. Like, what are you going to see when they're wearing helmets? Can't tackle the quarterback. Or they let us watch punting drills. I'm like, oh, geez, come on. It's the worst. But it's spring's good. It's good to find stuff. But just looking for coverage, I'm like, okay, nothing. Ah, here we go. So your stuff's great. So everybody,
thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, check out Bucky's Fifth Quarter. If you like, if you're a Utah State fan listening, I know there's hopefully a good amount. Hopefully you enjoyed this because you did great great content. Like I said, I ask one question, you answer 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 throughout. But it's kind of dope. Thanks for hopping on today. We'll get this up probably this week. This probably will end up being a standalone because what are we at here? 40 minutes here? Yeah, most likely.
Yeah, we're about 4 minutes, yes.
That's perfect. Man, if you're in Wisconsin, Utah State, listen to this in your car drive going to work. Whether it's August, June, July, we'll keep sending this out there. But yeah, Jake, thanks for checking in with us. And again, your Twitter, JakeCocoB5Q. That's KOCOB5Q. And there's the number 5 in Bucky's fifth quarter as well. So check out there for whatever, Wisconsin football. And who knows, you may find something interesting on the site because you got your amazing book out there for the walk-ons. Because that's a pretty big deal for getting, like you said, Stalve and other guys have been good walk-ons to be not just earn a scholarship, but actually key players on this team throughout the years.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the plug on that. Yeah, Walk On This Way was released in October. It's Wisconsin's walk-on tradition, you know, it's been huge ever since Barry Alvarez took over the program. And a quick plug on that, like, you know, Jim Leonard's a former walk-on who's a defensive coordinator. Guys like, you know, he played 10 years in the NFL. A guy like Mark Tauscher in the NFL for the Packers for 10 years. You look at recent ones, Joe Schobert, who's with the Browns. Alex Erickson was an undrafted free agent that led the NFL in kickoff return yardage last year. Yeah, you know, for the Bengals and worked his way up from being unknown. And guys like Joel Stavi and J.J. Watt. How can you forget about J.J. Watt?
He's amazing.
Yeah, and so like we didn't get a chance to talk to him for the book, but we talked to his parents, we talked to his athletic trainer, we talked to his high school coach, we talked to Brett Bielema and Charlie Partridge, who were his defensive coordinator and head coach at the time, respectively. Like we talked to all these guys and you know and just Chris Maragos, who's in the NFL, who's become a good friend, and so you kind of just look at it and you see this history, and it's been not just they call him the glue in the foundation, the guy, you know, the stick and hold up when scholarship players kind of fall through or things don't work out on the recruiting trail. You guys have stepped up and just the work ethic they put in, and it was fun to read, and hope you guys read it. It's on Amazon.com or KCISports.com, and hope you guys read it. And just thanks again for having me on, Jeremy. I really appreciate it, bro.
For sure, man. One last thing. If the Texans get a quarterback, J.J. Watt's getting a Super Bowl ring. I'm just saying, I'm a Texans fan. It's like, you pass on Derek Carr, you pass on this guy. Even Zach Mettenberger would have been happy over who they've had the past couple of years. So,
aren't they talking about Patrick Mahomes, too? From Texas Tech.
That's what I'm seeing. I'm like, well, we'll figure it out. Maybe being here in Mountain West, Josh Allen will somehow get to them next year. Maybe that'll be the key. I don't know. But
from Wyoming, right?
Yeah. Well, there are some crazy people saying number one this year if he came out. I'm like, slow your roll, guys. He's pretty good, but we'll see. He's more of a next year guy, but telling him to get a Texans a QB and I'd be happy because Osweiler, just punt him away. So, but yes, one last time, Jake, thanks for hopping on with us, and go check out Bucky's fifth quarter, and have a good one, man.
Hey, thanks, man. You too, guys. Thanks for listening.
Once again, I want to give a huge thank to Jake Kokorowski from Bucky's5thquarter.com. Ton of good info. And one note I probably should have said before, this is just before their spring game, which they had. Now I think it's like 2 weeks ago. But again, thanks for him and for joining us to give us a preview of Wisconsin and Utah State. And hopefully our goal is to talk to whoever is within the non-conference, like Wake Forest, Utah State plays. We're going to talk to the folks at Alabama who play Colorado State and Fresno State. Got Oregon State on the docket this week as they also play the Rams. And we'll just talk to as many people as we can to get everybody informed for this offseason. That's we're months and months and months away. It's the first week of May here, folks. But hopefully that was a great interview. I got a lot of good info there from Jake. But check us out again. We're now new to TuneIn. So if you use that app, you can download us there. We're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Obviously, Blog Talk Radio. And again, to help us out a little bit, we have some sponsors. We mix them up in the credits on the show notes. So if you want to get a good deal on certain things, we have food stuff, we have ticket stuff up and down. We'll have a magazine stuff for a digital magazine, different types of options for a deal for you guys out there. So hey, help us out. That'd be great. Again, click on the links on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, you can play this show and mute it if you'd want. That's fine too. I don't care. Just, we love that you listen to this show. That's what we like. And help us out a little bit. Maybe we have something you like as well in return. So that'd be great. Tell two friends. Tell a couple of friends about the show as well. Even if you think we're just okay, let them know as well. But that was our show tonight. Thanks again for Jake Krokorowski. Check them out at buckysfifthquarter.com for everything Wisconsin. And thanks for listening, folks. And as always, yes, we're biased against your team.